from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. The Bay Area added thousands of jobs in June. That's according to a state labor report released just last week. But some economists warn that the region's job growth could soon stall as high housing prices and weak transportation infrastructure make it hard for companies to recruit the workers they need. We'll look at current economic trends in the Bay Area and who is and is not benefiting from the region's robust economy. It's all coming up next after the news. Welcome to this morning's Forum program. I'm Michael Krasny. The Bay Area added thousands of jobs across a variety of sectors in June. That's according to a report released just last week by the California Employment Development Department. And unemployment rates in some Bay Area counties, including San Francisco and San Mateo, now hover at or under 3%. Well below the statewide rate of 4.6%. But some economists worry that as sky-high housing prices drive workers from the region and as transportation infrastructure fails to keep up with demand, economic growth may soon stall. In this hour, we want to look at regional and statewide economic trends, who is benefiting from our robust economy, who is left out, and what can and should be done to keep workers and businesses in the Bay Area. Joining me to parse the trends and the numbers are Chris Thornburg. He's founding partner of Beacon Economics. He's in San Jose this morning in our San Jose studio. And Chris Thornburg, welcome back to Forum. Good to have you.
Nice to be here, Michael.
Also want to welcome Michael Weinberg, who's here with us in studio. He's president of the Economic Institute at the Bay Area Council. And welcome, Michael Weinberg.
Thanks a lot.
And let me begin with, actually, it's Dr. Weinberg, PhD in political economics. Strong job gains in June. That's the good news. Bad news is the housing market is still tight and it's causing really kind of a job ceiling.
Yeah. I mean, our labor force actually shrunk over the course of the past year by almost 10,000 workers, and that's not something we should be excited about. The very low unemployment rates are a lot of folks that are already here becoming employed, but we're not bringing new people to the Bay Area because there's nowhere to put them.
And the housing costs, I mean, when you look at the numbers just for inflation, adjusted for inflation here in the Bay Area, rents are over the past four years up 20%, the housing prices up 60%. That's become, as we've said, a crisis.
Yeah, absolutely. And a crisis for people at all levels of income. And so that's what we need to be doing is building housing at all levels of income. And then thinking about the extent to which this crisis is not just one of the Bay Area, but one that is really, pushing people out into the larger Northern California mega region and leading to the mega commuting from places like Sacramento.
You're bullish on the economy in general, though, but hesitant, I presume, because the infrastructure can't keep up with the pace and the growth?
Well, I mean, so the question is, can we slow down without crashing? We're certainly in a slowdown. The rate of job growth isn't what it was last year. The rate of venture capital investment in San Francisco and Bay Area-wide is a little bit down from what it was. But that doesn't necessarily mean that we're going to head into a major recession. And a lot of the smaller bubbles that have been popped and, you know, companies that have perhaps gone out of business have been replaced by, for example, Amazon, having now a huge new footprint in San Francisco.
Well, in fact, they're building in Tracy, they're doing a distribution center there, which will create a lot of new jobs. But each tech job that's created, and tech job is kind of broadly defined here, according to the reports I read, about four jobs come aboard. So that's all very positive. But let's just pause for a moment because you've got essentially an economic sector that needs constant new investment. If they aren't profitable or they're privately held, they depend on the market.
Right. Absolutely. And so, you know, the question is, how long can these good times roll? And we have seen some companies, you know, major venture capital companies that have gone belly up recently. But on the other hand, we've seen a tremendous amount of economic growth of companies either that were here and ended up getting acquired by large companies. I mean, we forget, because I guess it's just the world that we're living in, that we have created two of the world's most valuable companies over the course of the past couple of decades. And that ends up being a pretty big economic boon.
And again, Michael Weinberg is president of the Economic Institute at the Bay Area Council. Chris Thornburg is founding partner of Beacon Economics. And Beacon has done some forecasting here. How do things look from your perspective, Chris?
Well, we don't see any downturn in the near future. There's plenty of reason for optimism about the broader U.S. economy, global economy. You know, I like to say when we talk about the slowdown in the San Francisco Bay Area that Mike already referred to, there's sort of, a proximate and ultimate cause of that. Last year, the proximate cause was the kind of global slowdown we saw that was wrapped around the big commodity bust. And that caused some fear in the markets, a big pullback in venture capital. That all started to fade away towards the end of 2016. And indeed, coming into the first quarter of 2017, we saw a substantial acceleration in business investment. Of course, business investment is one of the primary drivers of growth in the Bay Area economy. And, of course, as that investment starts returning, we expect that growth in the region, particularly in these tech sectors we're referring to, is going to start picking up. But, of course, there's this ultimate issue, which has to do with housing and the lack of available labor supply. What you're seeing now is even tech has stabilized and it's actually starting to pick up some speed. But at this point in time, because there is no available labor, there's no slack in the labor market, there's very little way in the way of new housing supply coming on board. And from here on out, every time you add a tech job, it doesn't add four jobs. And in fact, if anything, it starts subtracting from the broader economy. Because now, with a lack of housing, tech grows at the expense of the broader economy. Someone has to leave to allow that tech company to grow. This is not new. In fact, if you look at the Bay Area over the last 25 years, it turns out the Bay Area economy has been one of the slowest growing in the state, despite the fact that you have tourism and these incredibly important and wealthy tech sectors booming in the region. The lack of housing has been a consistent cap, if you will, on the ability for the region to grow for years. And we're back to that point.
But it is a pretty tight labor market. I mean, there is a ceiling that we keep hearing about. I'm talking about the Bay Area, but I'd also like to get the picture from you of how it compares to the state. I mean, Bay Area things are booming, but that's not necessarily true throughout California.
Well, I mean, it depends on what you mean. I mean, there has been, I think, this ongoing myth, if you will, that the coastal parts of the state are doing great and the inland areas are not. That's simply not true. Take, for example, the Inland Empire, the center of so much of the pain in the housing downturn. Right now, really, actually, over the last 4 years, the Inland Empire has been growing as fast, if not faster, than San Francisco and San Jose in terms of overall job growth. So the inland areas actually have been doing very well. Fresno has been growing better. Sacramento has been growing better. Now, there has been a little bit of a slowdown across the state over the course of the last year or so. But the slowdown is far less pronounced in the inland areas than it has been along the coasts, again, due to the fact that housing is still available in those inland areas. Where along the coast, there's simply no more space. And from here on out, the coast's ability to grow is largely going to be dependent on how many people you can pump down those highways on a daily basis.
Well, I know you were at an event with Julie Payne, who I guess is now with ABAC. She's former mayor of Clayton. Julie Pierce, I'm sorry. And she's talking about California Environmental Quality Act is really hurting housing because it gets too long and too delayed in terms of the process. I'd like to just get your thoughts about regulations and policies that put the rest of the state at risk.
It's CEQA is absolutely part of it, but I like to say that housing has died from a thousand cuts. CEQA is part of it. Rampant NIMBYism is part of it. Our outdated zoning laws is part of it. Our incredibly complex political systems where we pack so many different local jurisdictions within these small counties is part of it. But I would argue that in the end, the biggest issue, the biggest barrier to housing really boils down to one of incentives. Prop 13 has created a situation by which property taxes simply have become an irrelevant source of income for local governments. They are relying on gross receipts taxes, on transient occupancy taxes, on sales taxes. And as a result of that, there is an inherent bias for them to want commercial real estate, not residential real estate. From a cost-benefit analysis, it just makes sense. The state understands we have a housing crisis, but their immediate response is to punish cities to try and get them to allow more housing to be built. Well, look, we all read the basic book on raising children, and we know that negative reinforcement is a bad way of training your children. Well, it's the same thing with cities.
Let me go to Micah on this. I'm going to get Micah Weinberger weigh in on this because the past 7 years we've built less than half the housing that the region needs, and it's hard to recruit people when you've got those kind of housing costs, not to mention transportation and weak infrastructure. Michael Weinberger?
Well, I guess the good news is that my son is not listening to this radio program because I do occasionally send him to his room from time to time. Well, maybe he is listening. But I think one of the key points that that Chris has been making and the key points related to housing is that the Bay Area is not an island. And so to the extent that we don't accommodate the housing growth here, and we won't, we're going to be seeing people come in from distant places. Chris mentioned how many people we can pump down the highway. People are obviously very excited about the prospect of high-speed rail coming in from places like Fresno. And then ultimately, we're interested in how the economy is going to grow together within the state and what the connections are across the broader state and the broader Northern California mega region. So, these are really interlinked economies. But I think we also need to be careful. So there's a very exciting signing ceremony going on right now related to the cap and trade bill. And I think it's good that we passed that bill. But there's this idea that California can regulate as much as it wants and it doesn't matter because we have the most amazing economy in the entire United States. I hear that all the time. And I think we need to be a little bit careful about that, because although Chris is right that we've seen a good amount of growth in places like the Inland Empire, things like a very high minimum wage, things like some of the regulations related to the energy industry are going to have a disproportionate impact outside of the Bay Area, where the economies are not as driven by tech as they are here.
Now, let me talk about here with you for a moment. Can the Bay Area really sustain and foster the kind of growth that it has been doing?
Well, I mean, no, for the time being.
I think that's a simple answer. Yeah. I mean, that's probably correct. Yeah.
Where would they go, right?
Well, actually, there's a problem there, isn't there, Chris Thornburg? There's a concern about people moving out now because they can't afford the housing here. And Amazon may be building in Tracy distribution centers and the like. There are going to be more jobs down there and so forth. But people now who work in San Francisco have to take that long commute from places like Tracy and even farther.
Well, it depends on who you are in San Francisco, right? I mean, look at these amazing new tech sectors and the wages those workers earn. They can afford to live in San Francisco. Indeed, going back to this idea of myths, while San Francisco has some of the highest apartment rents, believe it or not, it has one of the lowest rent burdens in the entire state, largely because renters in San Francisco tend to be very, very high income compared to other parts of the state. So again, what you have going on is a slower growth economy, but one that continues to grow, particularly in these high-wage sectors. It's going to become more and more wealthy and grow, if you will, in a slightly different sort of way. I call it Country Club California, because really you're creating this huge barrier to entry that only the wealthiest can afford to enter, and the place will look wonderful, but of course that wonderfulness comes at the expense of making lower income workers either commute hours to get into town and into their job, or equivalently, to simply seek employment outside the Bay Area completely.
Yeah, let's talk about those lower wage workers for a moment, because I was looking at some figures in San Francisco area. Cooks and fast food workers, for example, have an hourly wage of about $11.62 as opposed to $9.89. It's better than the USA, and that's true in retail sales. That's true in a lot of things. But the cost of living here is so extraordinarily high. I mean, there are a lot of people who are being left out about this boom that we're talking about.
Right. Well, I think we need to take the cost of living very seriously. We've put a lot of energy into increasing people's wages, but if ultimately people need to be making $35 an hour to be able to afford to live in the Bay Area, I don't think we're going to have a $35 an hour minimum wage. So we need to take housing growth very seriously. We need to take the cost of transportation very seriously. BART is a very expensive system to ride on a day-to-day basis. And we do a lot of work at the Bay Area Council on economic inclusivity. And I'm engaged right now in a project called the Bay Area Young Men of Color Employment Partnership. And what you find is that the things that are really getting in the way of racial justice and economic justice in the Bay Area are all around the cost of living. It's about whether or not people have stable housing that they can afford. It's whether or not they can afford literally to get to the economic opportunity. And right now, that cost of living is not consistent with economic inclusivity.
Well, let's talk a little bit more about cost of living with you, Chris Thornburg. But first, I want to get it on the record, so to speak, here, that the State of California Employment Development Department says job growth in the Bay Area and the state has slowed since January, though it outpaces the national level.
It absolutely has slowed. In fact, I would argue it's slowed over the last 12 months or so, and we're just barely above the national level at this point in time. Compare that to, say, 2 years ago, 2.5 years ago, when we were growing substantially faster than the state, the nation overall. And what's important here to keep in mind is when you look at that slowing, we have to remember that GDP growth in the state is still faster than for the nation overall. The hotels are busy. The airports are busy. There's still lots of new construction and commercial real estate going on. In other words, there's no sign of a slowing in demand for labor, and therefore, because it's not a demand situation, it must be a supply situation. And again, that it goes back to this idea that we've simply run out of housing, and as a result of that, we don't have a lot of available workers anymore. It's a big issue, and to the point that Micah was just making, this lands hardest on lowest income workers who are forced to make really a choice. Do I move or do I live in these near poverty conditions because it's so expensive to stay within the Bay Area? And of course, the new battleground for that is the city of Oakland itself, a place that still is accessible to people of many income levels, but that is ending rapidly as tech is starting to flow across that Bay Bridge on a regular basis. I like to say that every place in the country wants to be the next Silicon Valley, except for the East Bay, because people there understand what this means in terms of the process of gentrification.
More tech job growth in the East Bay. And if you've just joined us, we're discussing job growth, the housing shortage, another Bay Area, and statewide economic trends with Chris Thornburg of Beacon Economics and Michael Weinberg of the Economic Institute at the Bay Area Council. And we do indeed welcome your involvement in the program. You can join us a number of ways. You can join us by phone. In fact, we welcome your phone calls now. If you have comments or questions, please feel free to join the program at 866-733-6786. The number again for your calls, toll-free, 866-733-6786, or join us by emailing us, forum@kqed.org. We'd like to know what your prospects are in terms of the economy. Is it serving you? Is it really something that you're bullish about, or do you have your concerns? And if those concerns ones you want to air, then you have an opportunity to let us know what they are. Catharsis here on the air. But also, let us know any questions you might have. Again, you can also join us by going to our website, kqed.org/forum, or emailing us, forum@kqed.org, or tweeting us. Our Twitter handle is @KQEDForum. Many ways to be a part of the program. We do welcome your involvement. And let's go, Michael Weinberg, to something that's happening, actually, according to the Pipeline Report, 50,000 units in the works in San Francisco.
Yeah, I mean, we've got actually across the Bay Area more housing permits than we have seen. But keep in mind, you know, this is a hole we've been digging for 40 years, right? And there's an enormous amount of demand. And we are hundreds of thousands of units behind where we need to be in order to have a better affordability across the Bay Area. But there is a slight uptick this year in permits versus last year at this point.
And Chris Thornburg, before we start taking our calls and emails, I was looking at the Spur report, and they're talking about all the uncertainties and concern about the market. You know, you've got slowdown in China and low gas prices and, well, higher interest rates, all of this sort of thing, as well as a present administration that's pretty volatile, to put it mildly. There could be an economic correction. There could be a recession. I mean, we can't really predict that, but there's no predicting ultimately. But a lot has to do with sort of following the NASDAQ stock index.
Well, you know, I like to say that it's my job to predict. So hopefully there's a little bit of ability to do that.
You predict a recession? I mean, you know, boom means bust follows and recession may be up ahead.
There's always going to be another recession. But to predict another recession, you first have to ask yourself why. Recessions don't happen for no reason. And you'd have to say to yourself, well, what will cause this next recession? I don't see any imbalances in the system today the way, say, we saw in 1999, where there was just a complete imbalance within business investment and corporate profits. Or in 2006, when you had this vast overbuilding of homes and vast overborrowing by the financial system and households, today you don't have any of those big imbalances out there, the kind of things that can crack and create the conditions that we think about as a recession. Now, your point about the current administrations is perfectly true. Had they come out of the gate and, say, created a major trade war with China, that could have been quite debilitating to the U.S. economy and, yes, potentially even recession-causing. But really, at this point in time, the primary, if you will, I don't know how to put it exactly, but the primary thing this administration has demonstrated is its inability to do much of anything. And so in a very real sense, it almost feels like we were a year and a half ago, but it's incompetence rather than political partisanship that's preventing anything from happening in Washington, D.C.
And let's bring our callers in here. Richard, we go to you first. Welcome. You're on the air.
Thank you. I hear a definite kind of positive attitude towards growth and what we have to do to encourage it. I'm not so sure that I agree. I look at Manhattan, which has four times the population density of San Francisco, and wonder if we built San Francisco, if we doubled the population, would that have any impact on housing prices? Certainly Marin County, you could fairly dramatically increase the housing stock, and I think the demand is so strong it wouldn't affect prices. But in both those situations, you'd deeply affect the quality of life. You'd have more crowded cities. You'd have more crowded infrastructure. And I'm not sure that I'm in favor of that. I don't see why growth is always such a positive.
Let me hear from you on this, Michael Weinberg.
Well, I mean, look, I'm 40 years old. There are twice the number of people in the world as there were when I was born. Some of them are going to have to live around here, right? I mean, obviously, we want to manage growth in the right way. But yes, absolutely. Building reduces prices. There's no debate about that among economists, although obviously, it increases demand to some extent as well. And so, but absolutely, the caller's point is very well taken. We need to do better transportation infrastructure. We need to make sure that we're planning for smart cities. We just don't want to do, growth willy-nilly.
But all again, Chris Thornburg, you have these rising home prices and apartment prices going up, and it is driving people out, and companies are complaining that they can't find workers that they want to hire.
Absolutely. But let's give the caller some credit. He's just acknowledging something that a lot of Californians feel. Sure, they don't mind growth. They just don't want it here. From my perspective, if you're going to have that opinion, own it. Don't pretend you care about issues such as high housing costs when the policies you're putting into place to prevent growth are the ones creating those particular conditions. If we want to create a California that's only for the richest and wealthiest, that becomes a playground for the well-heeled, well, that's fine. That's the credible policy goal. I don't want to live in that California. I'm guessing Micah doesn't either.
No, sir.
But at least say it out loud.
All right. Well, as I said, if you've just joined us, we're talking about the economy here in the Bay Area, discussing job growth, the housing shortage, and other Bay Area statewide economic trends with Chris Thornburg of Beacon Economics and Michael Weinberg of the Economic Institute at the Bay Area Council. And we will take your calls and your emails when we return. Actually, let me read something from Louise here. In my area, houses are now being purchased by foreign buyers, Chinese and Indian, for all cash, mostly by parents buying for children who don't work, so housing appears to be bought in some cases not to provide housing for local workers, rather used as a bank for foreign money. If we allow this to continue, there will always be a shortage for workers and locals. It comes up all the time, and so does something that was referred to and alluded to recently as just a few moments ago, that is population growth. It's inevitable, and it keeps exponentially moving forward. So we'll talk more with you. We'll hear from you when we return. Stay tuned. I'm Michael Krasny. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. We're taking the pulse this hour of the Bay Area and state economies. Have two leading economists with us, and Michael Weinberg is one of them. He's in studio with us. He's with the Economic Institute at the Bay Area Council, and Chris Thornburg with us from our San Jose studio is Beacon Economics and has been with Beacon Economics for a number of years. And we're getting some responses here that I just wanted to – I asked a whole question about how bullish or how pessimistic are you, how sanguine or how unhappy with things. And as you can imagine, a lot of different responses coming in from listeners. Here's Brendan, who says, how about an increased property tax of at least 1% on all residential properties that are vacant more than 6 months per year, like Vancouver just passed? Bob asks, what about quality of life? I don't want San Francisco to be the next Shanghai or Mumbai, crowded, polluted, urban nightmare. A couple more comments. Here's Jake on the definite pessimistic side. He says, in Bangalore, you can live in your car. In San Jose, you get kicked out of your car and your car gets towed. This is reality, folks. The paid government workforce works for the landlords. No one else has any real rights to live in the Bay Area. How's that shape up with you, Michael Weinberg, and your bullishness?
Well, a variety of opinions, obviously, on this. But I think it's important to really lay out a positive vision for growth. Because when a lot of people look at growth, they worry about our turning into urban areas that they dislike for whatever reason. And we need to give people a positive vision for growth. We need to, because there are more people in the world and we're going to need to accommodate some of them around here, we need to do it with better regional transportation planning. We need to do it with, housing growth at all levels of affordability. We need to do it in a way that creates these communities, because urban is not bad.
Is this where you're on board on this idea of a mega region?
Yeah, absolutely. And we need to plan for the mega region. We need to look at how are we, building sustainably instead of sprawling from San Francisco to Sacramento. How are we building a smart city of Sacramento and of San Francisco? And then how are we connecting that with a train that gets from San Francisco to Sacramento in an hour? I mean, if you do any traveling in China, it's just embarrassing. Because during the time that we've been sort of nickel and diming each other on the creation of this essential environmental infrastructure, they've created a whole high-speed rail network basically for their entire country. And that's one of the big reasons why we're falling behind in this country, is because we're not making the type of public infrastructure investments that are going to allow us to support an economy that grows and creates the types of cities that we want to see.
And let me read a comment that I'd like you to respond to, Chris Thornburg. It's from a listener named Mike, who's bringing up a whole different dimension here. He says, call me a NIMBY, but there simply is not enough water in California to support our present population, plus our wildlife long term. Additional people need to go somewhere other than California.
I love that comment because of just how massively untrue it is. In the middle of a drought, this state grew millions of acres of hay, of which a quarter was put onto boats and shipped to places like China and Korea and Japan to feed cows. We have a tremendous amount of water in this state. And like so many of the wonderful resources here in California, we have proven ourselves absolutely incapable of managing that resource in any logical way. It's not true. There's plenty of water out there. It's really just a function of Californians kind of growing up and acknowledging the reality of the situation. To Micah's point, there's plenty of room for densification in the Bay Area without any major decline in the quality of life. Now, admittedly, I'm not sure how many more people you can put into San Francisco, that little point of land on its own. But if you look down the peninsula into San Mateo, if you go down into even here to the San Jose region, and how actually low density this is, you understand there's plenty of room for growth, but people are going to have to acknowledge that the world's going to change a little bit. But, of course, California, we continue to live in this sort of 1960s pastoral suburban dream world where we imagine that somehow or other the world's not going to change from what it was. Well, we have to look ahead, stop looking behind.
And again, Chris Thornburg is with Beacon Economics, and Tom is our next caller. Tom, you're on the air. Morning.
Oh, hi. Thank you. I was alluding to the fact that somebody was mentioning about the high cost of transportation or traveling on BART. Did a quick math. I live in Fremont. My commute to Montgomery Street, A, takes 90 minutes each way, approximately, because I can't board a train in Montgomery when I return. The second thing is, the cost is something like $12 per day. Add to that $5 of parking, that's $17 a day just to keep my job, $85 a week, $340 a month, and $3,600 a year just to keep my cost. The question is, if BART is making such a lot of money out of the fares that everybody pays, why is the infrastructure so abysmal when it comes to BART's upgrades? Why is it that, we do not have an increase in the frequency of the trains that we have over here?
Let me go to you on this, Michael Weinberg.
Well, we're working on it. There are a lot of things that are going on in terms of investment with BART. We're going to see new BART cars running on the lines. We're And it's also important to make sure that we address the labor costs associated with BART. These things need to happen at the same time. And in the interim, we need to make investments. But it isn't just BART. And I think one of the challenges that we have in the Bay Area is that we have, 26 or more individual transportation agencies for our region. And you can't think about just BART. You can't think about just the H train. You can't think about just Caltrain. We have a regional transportation system that needs to work better together. And therefore, we need better regional transportation planning to make sure that people have convenient and affordable ways to get to work.
Been talking about that for years now. And
I know.
Where's the progress?
I know. Well, we're going to put out one more white paper at the Economic Institute, and then I'm sure that that'll change the entire situation.
Well, let me thank the caller, and I hope the situation changes for you. Obviously, he's budgeting and taking BART as part of that. Let me get Emily on next. Emily, thanks for waiting. Welcome.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. My parents have lived in Palo Alto since the late 80s, and they have a room above their garage that they just use for storage, and they've wanted to convert it into a small studio for a teacher and rent it out, well below market. But the regulations in Palo Alto make that really difficult. So I'm wondering if that's another area where we could improve. We don't want it to get too dense. You don't want people looking over your backyard, but, a little bit of expansion there might help.
Well, let's hear from you on this, Chris Thornburg.
Well, I'm to understand that the state actually has some new rules in place that will allow that kind of granny flat process to be a little smoother within these local jurisdictions. Indeed, I have one of my folks who has a place in San Diego, and he's waiting for these new laws to kick into place because he's going to build himself a big one in the backyard as well. So, yeah, this is something that could help, should help, and I think the state is acknowledging that and working to make those easier to do. But in the end, it's still not going to supply as much as the state needs.
Yeah.
I mean, easily the state is behind by 800,000 units or so. And unfortunately, these little marginal changes just aren't going to move the boat, if you will. We have to have a wholesale change in how we look at real estate development in the state of California.
Yeah, the Bay Area Council sponsored the piece of legislation that made what are called accessory dwelling units, the fancy name for granny flats, easier to do throughout the state. And a lot of the argument is, well, where are my parents going to live? Where are my kids going to live? My kids can't come back and live near me. One of the things I implore people in the Bay Area to do is expand their circle of empathy. It's good that people have empathy for the members of their own family. I want them to have empathy for the surface workers in the Bay Area. I want them to have empathy for the people that aren't in their families. I want them to have empathy for the people who want to come to the Bay Area to access the economic opportunity that is here.
Well, many of the people who are here are weighing in, and there's a lot of concern that's being expressed in some of these comments. Let me give another sampling. Aaron writes, I own a two-bed, one-bath condo, bought it in 2007. I have since had two children. I can't purchase a new property, not enough equity, and I can't afford to go into the renter's market. I'm stuck. Here's Richard who writes, this push to build, baby, build and destroy years of zoning planning is a red herring. Our Bay Area is already overstressed with traffic out of control. Building more housing for more people occupying our limited area will poison our environment. I like to breathe clean air and see the mountains. More houses will destroy us. And Joan writes, actually, there isn't a shortage of employees. There is a shortage of employers who will hire people who aren't young and cute. It's called age discrimination. Should append to that it is against the law if you can prove it, Joan.
Both Chris and I are employed, and we're neither young nor cute. So it's a
you're younger and cuter than I am.
Oh, thanks, Chris.
Yeah, well, I've got neither of those going for me anymore either. But here's a listener who writes, why can't we encourage businesses building in the Bay Area to have multifunction buildings with a layer of business offices and a layer of apartments, which could function as subsidized housing for its employees and keep traffic off the freeways?
Yeah. So one of the things that's been very interesting has been seeing organizations like Google and Facebook, and there have been others, really getting into the housing market, which is actually kind of an odd thing for them to do, right? But they've seen that this is a challenge that the Bay Area has, and they're really stepping up in terms of, either supporting or even developing housing as well as transportation. I don't particularly like the idea of, sort of low-income housing for people's own employees. I'm from kind of near West Virginia and Ohio. It almost harkens back to like the, coal company towns. But we clearly need to be building housing for people of all employers. And I'm glad that employers are out there and actually having a positive impact on this conversation.
And we'll bring more of your calls in. And let's go next to Riley. Riley, thanks for waiting. You're on the air.
Hi, thanks. I want to expand on the point that the panelist just made about having empathy. It seems to me that all the people, like your first caller, who want to keep San Francisco and the Bay Area exactly like it is today, have no empathy for people who want to come here and live here and experience this beautiful place. To me, it seems like what they want is to have San Francisco all of themselves as a giant walled garden. And then the second point, they seem to think that they can freeze the world as it is now without realizing that they can either participate in making decisions for the future that necessarily going to change, or else it'll just happen to them.
Thoughts from you, Michael Weinberg?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, being progressive ultimately should probably have something to do with progress, right? So we need to understand that, the world is going to develop, and we need to make sure that it's developing in ways that are consistent with our values. One of the things that I want to, sort of highlight is this building needs to happen all across the region. We don't want to concentrate it exclusively into the very urban areas of Oakland and San Francisco. We want to, and we need to make sure that we're building in particular on the peninsula. So I'm glad that there's a proposal for the North Shore in the peninsula to, build, 10,000 housing units. I hope that that's what we end up doing. And if we don't build those units, it's important for people to understand the folks will still come, but they'll be coming instead from Tracy, from Sacramento, from Monterey, from as far as Tahoe, in order to have these same jobs. And that's not a development pattern that we want to have here in the Northern California mega region.
Well, Chris Thornburg, Micah mentioned expansion that's going on and corporate entities taking on the role of building housing. Alphabet, for example, is adding 300 modular units to development around Moffett. And as I mentioned, Amazon before is building these distribution centers. So there is a lot of expansion in the works. But Google has 20,000 job expansion down where you are, Chris, now in San Jose, in the works.
Yeah, and the question is where are these people going to live?
That's the question, exactly.
Yeah, I'm going to go back to what Micah was just talking about, which is, look, Oakland needs to build more, San Francisco needs to build more, but you can't rely on these couple cities with enlightened mayors to do all the heavy lifting. There's just too many cities up here that don't allow for any growth. I can think of, Mountain View or Los Gatos, places that build almost no new residential units. How do you change that? Well, let's go back to another fundamental reality, and this gets back to the BART issue. One of the reasons they haven't been able to put the money in BART is local governments are trapped. They're trapped between these rising pension costs and the fact that the revenue base is slowly but surely eroding because taxable sales just aren't rising that rapidly. One of the ways the state could fix the housing crisis is by creating a new tax system by which creating new residential units, in fact, expands the revenue base of local cities. If you make it financially worthwhile for these cities to have more housing, guess what? They'll build more housing. But, of course, that takes a bit of a leadership in Sacramento, and leadership, unfortunately, we have yet to see.
Well, and it also might take a crisis. So one of the things with the transformation of retail is to the extent that sales tax becomes a less reliable source of funding for localities, they may have to, in fact, look to tax reform in order to support the revenue base for the city. So maybe a crisis in sales tax or retail sales would actually lead the state to do some long-needed tax reform.
And we'll get Gabe on next. Gabe, thanks for waiting. You're on Forum.
Hi. I wanted to bring up a question about Bay Area mass transit and also a point about the Japanese train system around Tokyo. Tokyo has a joint public-private partnership where all the train companies there have agreed to use common rail lines, and there's public investment in that. Yet the train service is predominantly run by private companies and have, profits that they have to make, and they have excellent ridership. I wonder if there's any way that they could copy that model in the Bay Area.
More privatizing? What do you think, Micah?
Well, I mean, I think that...
Or partnerships with
public-private partnerships are good potentially for management. It's tough to finance transportation infrastructure with private money. But whether it's public or whether it's private, really the issue of management is crucial. And there's a tremendous amount we can do to manage our public transportation systems better, a lot of which would be, merging some of these public transportation systems. I'm a daily BART rider, and It is one of the, this system works amazingly well, given the number of people that it was designed for. I mean, you have to like people, which I do. You have to not mind standing next to them. But it gets people from where they need to go to where they need to go, even at the peak times, in a very efficient way, although obviously the system could be managed more efficiently.
And again, Michael Weinberg is at the Economic Institute of the Bay Area Council. And our next caller is Andrea from San Jose. You're on the air. Good morning.
Good morning. I was just actually wondering what we're doing as we're seeking to expand infrastructure and to expand the amount of housing and sort of scale upwards and outwards. What are we doing to keep into consideration the San Andreas Fault and, the unique geology of California itself and the potential imminent creep of the water level? So, due to climate change.
Well,
affect Monterey.
We've certainly got a lot of statutes in place, but Chris Thornburg, you want to comment on the overall picture?
Well, I think we know that modern civil engineering has all sorts of fancy tools in their toolkit that help deal with those kind of risks. I don't think that earthquake issues necessarily have to be in any way, shape, or form a barrier to growth within the region. Indeed, you look at many places, including Japan, where you see plenty of building. And, of course, that they're just as prone to earthquakes as we are here in California.
Here's a listener, Sue, and let me go to you on this, Michael Weinberg, who says, your guests have trotted out the usual culprits for the Bay Area jobs, housing imbalance, CEQA, and underbuilding for decades, but San Francisco has no shortage of market-rate housing. The shortage is in affordable housing. Please ask positions on rent control, requirements for developer community benefits. Are we getting enough?
So first off, it's not true that we have plenty of market rate housing at all. Certainly, it's also not true that we have enough affordable housing. But the big problem comes when we set up market rate housing against affordable housing, when we try to tax housing, so market rate housing, in order to produce housing, which is to say affordable housing. And that ends up setting up a zero-sum dynamic, which perpetuates the underbuilding that we've seen, which is the leading cause of poverty in the state. Underbuilding, the lack of supply of housing in coastal California, is the leading cause of poverty in the state. So I think that it's great to have sources of funding for affordable housing. I get more nervous when those sources of funding for affordable housing actually decrease the amount of market rate housing, because for every market rate unit that you don't produce, somebody who needs a house is going to be displacing somebody from a house that they're currently in. That's not even economics. That's just physics.
And Marte writes, when you talk about the high wage sectors, please remember the high taxes that they pay, nearly 30% income taxes before the paycheck is even delivered. James writes, I've read a lot recently about gentrification, find it to be an intractable issue. Do we have a way that we can revitalize cities without gentrification? These seem to be structurally opposed. Chris Thornburg.
Again, what Mike just said, it is true that we build a lot of this high-end housing, but we have to remember that when you create barriers to entry within the housing market supply, then naturally you have developers sort of tipping towards the highest-end units. That's where stuff gets built, because that's what cities will allow. That's where the fattest margins are for what limited amount can be built. If you're worried about workforce housing, again, you need to look at overall supply. Because if there's more and more supply coming online, very quickly that high-end part of the market gets saturated, and then developers start moving their sites to lower and lower-end housing. And again, going back to the idea of workforce housing, another issue in the Bay Area is, again, because of the lack of overall housing supply, you keep a lot of middle-class families in older housing stock, which is typically available to lower-income families within a market that has a natural expansion of the housing supply. I hate to sound like an economist, but this is really boils down to supply, and more supply. That's the answer to all these questions.
Chris Thornburg is with Beacon Economics, and he does sound like an economist. But here's David next. David, you're on.
Hi there. I'd just like to point out that for housing in San Francisco, there are thousands and thousands of permanently empty residential units in San Francisco, permanently empty year after year after year. I presume many of them are taxed at pre-Proposition 13 rates, so that it's very cheap for someone that doesn't need the income to keep them empty. In my block, there's three in one block, permanently empty 20 years later.
We should mention, I think Supervisor Aaron Peskin is looking into this. You want to comment, Michael Weinberg?
Well, I mean, obviously we want to, you know, be utilizing the housing resources that we have in the most efficient way possible. So, I mean, if you look at things like home sharing, those are people, you know, using rooms or using houses that are empty. But, yeah, I mean, we need to be occupying houses. We need to be building more houses for people. But in a situation where we have unnaturally constrained the supply of growth of housing in the Bay Area, we're actually unnaturally inflating the equity that people gain in housing, and therefore encouraging people to use houses and as investment properties rather than as homes. That's a big problem that we have in the United States, which because of the economics of different countries where housing doesn't necessarily appreciate, they don't have the same. The problem is that we want our houses to be investments. We want them to appreciate rapidly, but we also want them to be homes. But if we don't, you know, build, then they'll appreciate more rapidly. So we have these economic forces that are really fighting against each other to the detriment of a lot of people in California and elsewhere.
And let me thank David for his call and read a couple more listener comments. Mark writes, "You say people are working, but I say people are not thriving. Lots of money going through people's wallets and nothing is saved and credit cards rack up. We are moving to Charlotte and I am sad to leave California because it's my home. I'm flying to Charlotte and I'm giving the most expensive part of the world the middle finger from the air."
Aw, that's so sad.
Judith writes, "Recently, a home in Albany sold for almost $2.5 million. A real estate professional I know well proudly told me about this sale. My response, how are our children and grandchildren going to be able to live near us? Mine live 2,000 and 3,000 miles from here with my grandchildren. Not happy about that." And a good deal of unhappiness, obviously, being expressed with this topic. Matthew writes, "What's the responsibility of employers under the current regime? I know Brisbane has added thousands of jobs recently and virtually no housing. Facebook has distorted the peninsula housing market terribly. Are there requirements to contribute to housing market for these mega employers?"
Well, I mean, I know that in terms of the Brisbane Baylands development, the Bay Area Council, which is an employer-backed organization, has been very supportive. We've been supportive of developments that have been proposed by or supported by Facebook, by Alphabet, by others. So the employers really are stepping up here. It's not really what they do. They're taking on a civic role in addition to an economic role. But I will say the employer community in the Bay Area, led by the Bay Area Council, is very, very attuned to this issue and working on it very hard.
Here's Christine. Christine, you're on the air.
Hi. Your guest is describing growth, but this isn't true growth. The elephant in the room is that this is the colonization of an area by one industry. And it played out before with the first tech boom and bust, where the artists in San Francisco in live workspaces were pushed out and their lofts were turned into living spaces. And then more lofts were built. Then the tech industry went bust and we had a whole bunch of lofts that were actually pretty easy to buy.
Chris Thornburg, colonization by one industry?
Well, look, history is all about succeeding waves of growth. Yes, tech is now a booming industry, and back in the day it was something else that was the booming industry that was displacing everything. There's no such thing as a static city. There's no such thing as a static economy. There's constantly waves of development in different industries. And to, again, pretend that somehow or other the world's going to remain static, well, that's just not an accurate view of history. That's not how the world works.
Yeah.
Every neighborhood goes through changes every generation or so. That's just the nature of things.
Yeah, Michael Weimer.
I get very uncomfortable with the use of a word like colonization in this context. I mean, the history of Western colonization of the rest of the world is a very, very sad history. This is not colonization. This is people coming to the Bay Area from around the world, from elsewhere in the United States, in search of opportunity. We, for example, want to say that we are going to be sanctuary cities, right? So other people coming here in order to get sanctuary. If we want to have sanctuary for people, we need to make sure that we have actual sanctuaries, actual houses for people who are economic refugees, but people who are just economically excited about participating in what's happening here in the Bay Area.
So to go back to where we began with Michael Weinberg talking about bullishness, and you're hearing it now to some extent in what he's saying. Chris Thornburg, you're the forecaster. How do you see things? Positive, for the most part?
Yeah, I think things are going to be fine. You're going to continue to see growth, but it's going to be slower. And we're going to continue to see these issues of gentrification because, candidly, no one in the local economy or the state economy has figured out any real solutions to the housing crisis. So I think my primary forecast is this. We're going to be having this debate over and over and over again for the next, at least the next couple of years.
Well, the debate will continue. Let's hope there's some solutions also on the horizon. As we've said, things have not necessarily been progressing the way many people would like, and you've heard some of this dissatisfaction from the comments that I've read and certainly from the calls that we've taken. And we will continue, obviously, to monitor this and to bring to your attention all that's going on here in the Bay Area and the state economically. I want to thank our two guests for really a good overview discussing job growth and the housing shortage and other Bay Area and statewide economic trends. And you can continue to put your comments on the line here in our either at our website, kqed.org/forum, or email us, forum@kqed.org. Chris Thornburg, again, is with Beacon Economics. And, Chris, thanks for being with us this hour.
It's a pleasure.
And thank you, Michael Weinberg of the Economic Institute of the Bay Area Council.
Absolutely.
And thank you, our listeners. We're here with you Monday through Friday, 9 to 11. An hour is repeated in the evening, 10 to 11. And in our next hour, we're going to update you on what's going on with health care, but we're also going to spend the hour with Vanessa Grubbs, who is a doctor out of Oakland who wrote a book called Hundreds of Interlaced Fingers. She's now a nephrologist, a kidney doctor, but before that she was a general care doctor who actually became a donor and then became a kidney doctor. And she married the guy she gave the kidney to. Lots to talk about up ahead. Stay tuned. I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation, and by Jan Schramm and Maria Minetti Schramm, founders of the Minetti Schramm Museum of Art at UC Davis, which preserves the legacy of renowned artists such as Wayne Thiebaud for future innovators by dedicating a third of its space to arts education.